Dr. Hunsberger, we're in section four, I believe. Oh, yeah, we need our.
Go ahead and sit down, Dr. Hunsberger, thank you.
We're gonna do Dr. Hunsberger's next, so yep, I just gotta get, we gotta get our two doctors. So section four, number four. Hello. All right, so we're gonna go to section four, number four, case 2380 regarding Don Hunsberger, BMD, monthly appearance is required by interim consent agreement. Board may review, discuss, and take action on information provided, including review of compliance with the interim consent agreement. Dr. Thompson is the lead, and Dr. Nosley is recused.
Good morning. How are you? Reviewed some of your self-testing that was happening. I saw we had a little glitch, but it looked like we figured out what was going on.
I immediately went out and bought one so I could send that one out, and then the next test also was glitched, so it got sent that day.
Yes, and you know, good job troubleshooting that and making sure that we were being proactive in that situation. You've been going to your meetings, and overall, how do you feel about the process? How are you doing?
I feel like I'm doing really good.
Good. Everything seems to be in order as far as I can see. So I just keep on trucking through. And again, I know that the holiday seasons can be tough for folks. So just stay strong. You're doing a good job.
Holiday parties are my hay people, so I have no family out here. My best friend moved, so.
Oh, no.
I do have two questions. One came up yesterday. I had emailed and called Victoria about trying to do a phone meeting today because we have two doctors that have a flu, and that's where I'm going after we're done work, is to work, so Dr. Lynn can go home. And she said she wasn't comfortable approving that because it's not in the consent agreement anywhere about that being something that's possible on an unexpected short term, not planned.
Gotcha. So I guess I would discussion with the board as far as.
I would suggest subject to approval by the executive director. As needed, as necessary, that phone appearances would be okay.
I don't know if she.
On a rare basis.
Yeah, she can't.
Yeah, I don't know if she'd be comfortable probably with that, though, because it's going against, we'd have to modify the consent agreement, I think, for that, wouldn't we?
Yes.
How far into the consent agreement are we?
She still has an interim.
Oh, we're still in the interim? Yeah, I would say, I wouldn't want to consider it until we're.
It would be more streamlined to include it in the final consent agreement.
I have one more quick follow-up question of Dr. Hunsberger. The record we received, and this may be due to your special arrangement regarding notification for random testing. Mm-hmm. We received a notification from Alversys that there was a no-show on 1024. Is that part of the process where they notify you and then you go to the other special provider?
Yep.
That's what I thought, but I want to make sure. Thank you.
And my other question, just because I came down early today and traffic is much worse, how do I contact you guys if there's a closure on 17 or an accident and I'm not going to be here by the time I'm supposed to be here?
You can call our office.
Okay.
And I understand I make the same drive, but so far, not so far.
Yes.
In 9 years, so I did.
Okay.
I'll email you the direct line and the kind of the back line.
Okay. I mean, it hasn't happened so far, but.
Sure, understand. Good question.
I watch the news in the morning for 20 minutes, and some days I'm like, I hope not me.
or when you're driving here and you see the time on your Google Maps continue to increase while it's
Yes, yes, yes. It went up to an extra 15 minutes this morning, but then it went back down because we were moving.
I also want to concur with Dr. Thompson's comment about the holidays can be particularly challenging. So be strong and care for yourself.
Yes, thank you. I don't have any comments.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're gonna start with our IIRs. So for your notes here, we'll start with in section 214, case 2511 is number one. Section two, number three, case 24147 is case two. Number four, case 24148 is three. Number six, case 24150 is four. And then down to 18, case 25153 is the fifth. And then we'll start from the top and work our way back down. Okay.
What is one?
Oh, so one is number 14, case 2511. And then two is three, case 24147.
Thanks.
Okay. All right. So we're going to start with case 2511 regarding Julianne Miller DVM. The respondent present. Oh, go ahead and come on up, Dr. Miller. Yes, Tracy, good morning. If you could please read the front load on the case.
Excellent. So case 2511, the complainant is Mark Davenport. The respondent is Julianne Miller, DVM. On May 6, 2024, Zeus, a 3-year-old male, Keen Posa, was on the urgent care list to be seen at respondent's premises. While complainant's wife was waiting for the dog to be seen, the dog passed away in the car. Earlier, the primary care veterinarian had called respondents' premises to advise them that the dog would be presenting to the premises with an undiagnosed GI issue. Complainant's wife, Ms. George, also called the report that the dog would, that she would be bringing the dog in. She was advised by respondent staff that there was a 2 to 3 hour wait. Ms. George stated that she was approximately 30 minutes away and was worried she would miss her window to be seen. The staff assured her that the dog would be seen even if she arrived late. Upon arrival, Ms. George was advised it would be another hour before the dog could be seen. She returned to the car to wait for the dog. A bit later, Ms. George returned to the premises in a panic, reported the dog had died. Respondent staff went to the car to attend to the dog. Amy Cropsey was elected and the dog was shipped to Midwestern University. And this case was not brought in front of the investigative committee. It was just fast tracked to you to review and consider.
Thank you. Okay, Dr. Miller, you're the respondent in this case. You can go ahead and address the board.
Okay. We have phone recordings and video recordings of all the interactions we had prior to Zeus presenting, and I just wrote up a short statement quoting from those phone conversations. I think best just to read to you what happened so that you can understand. Zeus Davenport George was presented to our clinic DOA on the evening of May 6th. Zeus had never been seen at our clinic prior to presenting DOA, and here are the recordings. There was four distinct interactions we had. The first one was on May 6th when Dr. Camper called us, who was the referring veterinarian, and described the patient as having a history of chronic vomiting and diarrhea that had been being seen at Aspen Veterinary Clinic multiple times with no complete resolution of clinical signs. Dr. Camper had seen the dog on the previous Friday, had run a pancreatic panel, and was still pending those results. He said he was going to try to get us all records, but he was in Phoenix and couldn't follow up with this patient. He had spoken with the client and had seen some pictures of the stool that she was seeing. He is a regular relief veterinarian for us and understands how our practice works, and described to the owner how our urgent care waitlist works, and said that she specifically said the animal was stable and could wait on our waitlist, and then that was the end of that conversation. She did say she lived 45 minutes away and that she would be pending a phone call. Shelley George called us shortly after that. Our CSRs advised her of how our waitlist works. She said, okay. Her only concern at that point was that she lived 45 minutes away. There was no other concern, and we promised her that once it was her turn, we would see her no matter how long it took her to get in. The third interaction we had was when she arrived in our lobby without her animal and said that she had come in because she was worried that she would miss her slot. How much longer was it going to be? Our CSR said that her best guesstimate was about an hour at that point. She was fifth on the list. And Shelley George at that time said that she would not hold her to that guesstimate and laughed. There was no concern about her dog. There was no conversation about what he was doing. And then the CSR recommended that she maybe get something to eat and call back, and she could give her a better idea of how long it was going to take. At that point, Shelley George said, okay, I will do that, and she walked back out to her car. The fourth interaction was Shelley George coming into our lobby and alerting us that her dog had died in her car, at which point my staff ran out there and attended to her immediately. The dog brought into our clinic was confirmed DOA, and unfortunately, the dog is very large, did not have a refrigerator that could hold the animal, could not be frozen. So we did what Midwestern recommended. We put the dog on ice outside until the courier could come the next day, because this was in the evening of the Monday. The courier came, got the dog, full necropsy stated, multicentric non-indolent T-cell lymphoma with mild to severe subacute ulceration, focal perforation of the small intestine with severe diffuse subacute peritonitis and hemorrhagic effusion of the abdominal cavity. We performed our duty to the best of our ability with the information that was provided to us at the time. Under no circumstances did we deserve the abuse that we received at the hands of Mr. Davenport after the fact, since he was not present for any of the interactions and has no firsthand knowledge of what actually happened.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. I'm Evelyn Slipback.
Thank you.
And then Mr. Davenport?
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead and come forward here. And you are the complainant in the case?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, all right. I will also give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Hopefully it won't take that long.
Okay.
I'm not great at public speaking. I'm a little loud because I'm a little deaf. And I'm going to apologize in advance because I'm already starting to weller up here. And what this young lady just said, she's skirting facts. And I've been on the road since 3 o'clock this morning, and I stopped and wrote some notes, so I'm going to do the best I can to go over this. For more than 3 hours, Shelley, my better half, drove around with my boy in the car. When this clinic was well aware that we were on the way. There is another pending matter before this board with another complaint regarding some misdiagnosis by a different clinic. I'm going to set that record right now. But 3 hours, three times Shelley went in this clinic begging for help. When I got back, I was tending to my brother's death in a different state when this all occurred. When I got back, this facility, by the records that I've submitted before this board, had the necropsy report for almost a month before they ever supplied it to us. I made no contact with this clinic until I had the facts in front of me. Yes, Zeus had T-cell lymphoma. End result was going to be the same. But nobody knew that on May the 6th, the date he died, and was made to ride around for 3 hours with my wife in the car dying when they were put on notice. My first contact was with a woman, and I'm sorry, but I don't know what her last name, but works for this clinic. I asked to speak to whoever was in charge. That was on or about the 12th, I believe, of June. I spoke with a Kelly, and she actually called me back and said she had listened to multiple phone recordings, and she said, oh, your wife said she had errands to run anyway. Folks, that's absolute BS. We live almost 40 minutes from this clinic. My wife, on a Monday, May the 6th, took off her federal government job that day to tend to our sick dog that we had just seen by Dr. Camper a few days before. There was no errands to run. We live out in the woods, basically on the side of a mountain. It was all BS. That same day, Kelly, when she said she actually made the comment, well, why didn't your wife triage him? How in the hell is my wife untrained in veterinary medicine to triage anything? I couldn't have done it. Now, I've spent quite a few years, and I won't embellish on that too much, but I've had a lot of, spent a lot of years with having a lot of horse crap shoved in my mouth and being told it's Swiss chocolate. What's going on in this matter is absolutely BS. If Ms. Miller knew, and she should have known about the going on and all the lies between her staff that I've got on recording, folks. I've got it all on tape, these people lying to try to cover up their own asses. I finally got a hold of Miss Erica Pillow, who is the director. Kelly's not the director. I didn't ask to talk to Kelly. Miss Pillow even leaves a message, which I have on recording, that says, well, and basically I'm going to paraphrase here. She says, well, your dog had T-cell lymphoma, he was going to die anyway. Nobody knew how sick my dog was, including the clinic that had been treating him for 5 months prior to. So why would they not come out and triage him? Shelly walked in that place 3 times asking for help and called 9 times. We've got the phone records. But why Dr. Miller doesn't refer to those calls, I don't know. Please produce the phone call that Kelly tells me they have with my wife on tape saying, oh, she had errands to run. Bullshit. And I'm sorry, folks. I'm very sorry. And I'm trying to stay on track here because I know I've only got a few minutes here. But if nobody knew, and nobody did know, that Zeus was this sick, why would you not treat him when you're being begged for help? Why would you allow a potential client when your other vet was out of town and called and put him on notice that we were on the way? Oh, sorry, this is what they said. We had another emergency come up in front of you. What? There was no errands to run. 3 hours till I drove around, my poor boy died in the back seat. You know, and then the other thing, I brought this up in my letter. I wrote a letter to Ms. Miller's husband, and it clearly states, because I was being ignored, the phone calls I was making, and I put in there, if you fail to respond to me and ignore me like your staff, there may be other consequences. Mr. Miller, the owner of this, the poor co-owner, from what I understand of this claim, he calls the Flagstaff Police Department on me. I put it in writing. He said I would threaten him. There was no threats made, verbal or in writing. Other consequences means potential litigation. I got the Flagstaff Police to report because Mr. Miller was told by them, bring us the letter. He never did. He let us hang out there. And then your staff, Ms. Erica Pillow, published to others in text messages, which we can get, and I have, and I've seen, that I made threats of bodily harm. Folks, it's been my understanding and my belief and my been shown to me over many years that when someone is guilty of a wrongdoing, one of the first things most of them do is start lying and pointing the finger at everybody else to detract from their own misdeeds. I'm asking you to do a thorough investigation. Make this facility produce the tape recordings of Dr. Camper, of my wife saying she had errands to run, and I will be happy to produce all the tape recordings I've got of the phone conversations, including the messages they left me and all the lies and all the attempts they did to point at everybody else except for their own misdeeds. I get it. Things happen. We live in a screwed up world and mistakes happen, but the extent of which these people have gone to cover up their own misdeeds, something's very, very wrong. And then not until this morning, I see why your I don't, what is this called, an agenda? Did you pick up out front here? Ms. Miller's actually up for some type of consideration to be on the investigative committee. I'm gonna tell you right now, folks, with the crap that I've got on this staff, and she's well aware of covering it up, she's got no business for being considered. How can you trust someone like that? Thank you. I'm sorry, but I'm begging for an investigation, a thorough one.
Thank you.
Because this should never happen to anybody else ever again, but the staff or any other vet.
I'm very sorry for your loss.
Sorry for your losses.
I'm sorry. Ms. Miller, I'm sorry.
So Dr. Wright, you are the lead on this case.
Yes, thank you. So it's a hard one because, of course, there is a fatal condition going on. I mean, even the complainant stated, unfortunately, Zeus was going to pass away, but the matter of it is kind of a question of what's going on here.
I have a question.
Yeah,
go for it. Just really quick, because this was a straight to board case.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, especially because both the respondent and the complainant brought up recordings, which we don't have. Is this, and maybe I ask Mark or Victoria or Tracy, is this something that we could ask to have the investigative committee look at so we can get all of these materials? Because it sounds like we've got a big gap in what is available, or at least which was stated today, is that there's recordings from both sides. And sometimes, you know, especially with something this emotional, and to me it sounds like there's a whole lot of communication gaps, right? That maybe we would get more information from that, a little more in the middle, like neutral on the...
He said, she said.
Yeah.
Big issue.
So I don't know, and I don't want to add time to this process, but at the same time, to do it justice, I don't know if we could. Can we?
Madam Chair, yes, you can refer it back to the investigative committee if we can gather additional information and have the investigative review it, the committee review it, and bring it back to you.
And that's actually a kind of better option, because I was thinking, because I had more questions on this. Like I said, the process itself, some questions about how urgent care, how the wait list works, how emergency works, are we advertising for this hours? Really, my big questions are around kind of like the complaints at the triage. I mean, on emergency, on urgent care, why was a patient not assessed to see, are we stable enough to wait? And that's my big concern right now. So I was thinking of moving this to a informal, but I think it would be better probably to remand it back to the investigative committee to start looking through a little bit deeper. So that'd be my motion at this point.
Second
motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, so we'll send that back to the investigative committee for some more information. Okay. So now we're going to call case 24137 regarding Michael Pechlowski, DVM.
I'm sorry, which case was that?
Sorry about that. Number three, case 24147.
147.
Okay. Thank you. And do we have the respondent, Dr. Pechlowski, here today?
I'm the complainant.
All right, go ahead. It doesn't look like he's present, so go ahead and step forward. Go ahead and state. I'm sorry. Yes, please. I'm sorry. We're going to go ahead and get the summary first. So.
Case 24147. The complainant is Ricardo Escobar, and the respondent is Michael Pechlowski, DVM. On March 18th, 2024, Smokey, an 18-year-old female domestic short hair cat, was presented to respondent for a second opinion due to a chronic cough. Thoracic radiographs revealed fibrotic changes that appeared to be related to the chronic inflammation in the lungs. It was elected to monitor the cat for any changes in her breathing, comfort, and quality of life. 2 weeks later, respondent staff called the pet owners to get an update on the cat's condition. It was reported that the cat was not doing well. She was losing weight and possibly losing her sight. Complainant asked about euthanasia services as they felt it might be getting close to making a quality of life decision. After hours, emergency information was provided to the complainant, the respondent was unavailable. On May 21st, 2024, the cat was presented to Scottsdale Animal Health Care for evaluation of possible blindness. Blood was noted in the anterior chamber of the right eye, and it was determined that the cat was hypertensive. The cat was started on amlodipine and rechecked 2 weeks later. On June 4th, 2024, the cat was still hypertensive. Blood in the anterior chamber was gone. The cat's pupils were still fixed and dilated. Complainant expressed concerns that respondent did not call them back after it was reported there was a concern for the cat's loss of vision. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred. It was removed and seconded that the board fine ARS 3222-3212 as it relates to R311-511, failure to provide professionally acceptable procedures for not contacting the pet owner, and recommending an evaluation of the cat due to possible vision loss. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. Okay, so a respondent isn't present, and then you're the complainant in this case?
I am the complainant, Ricardo Escobar.
Thank you, and you have up to 5 minutes to
address
the
board. Yes, and thank you, board members and staff, for having me here today for the 5 minutes. I heard the summary just now, and hopefully my summary will correct some of the inaccuracies stated in this, and I may file a follow-up complaint as a result in terms of documentation. But for now, we're going to talk about Smokey. Good morning, board members and staff. I'm here today to voice my concern regarding the veterinarian, one of your colleagues in Arizona, who provides care to this community. This is not a procedural error, as this is not only a procedural error as stated by the investigative committee, but it's also a lack of competence by this provider that resulted in permanent loss of function, blindness, to my cat, Smokey, of 18 years. We believe there was a lapse of clinical and critical thinking on part of this veterinarian, Dr. Michael Plotowski, also known as Dr. Mike by his patients and staff. Fundamental, basic care was not given, nor did he provide medical management in partnership with me, the cat owner. Our cat Smokey was previously seen by two veterinarians from the Arizona Animal Hospital for a chronic cough, Dr. Finstad and Dr. Davis. Smokey's cough had worsened, and the intensity of her cough worried us. We attempted to make an appointment with Dr. Finstad or Davis at the Arizona Hospital, only to learn that they no longer worked there. They had no appointment availability to see us. We learned that the new vet office had opened up near our home through one of our pet sitters, so we called the Rio Verde Animal Hospital to make an appointment. On March 18th, Smokey was provided a full exam and x-rays were taken. Dr. Mike came to the waiting room with the x-ray result, stated that Smokey had significant scarring in his lungs and nothing else could be done. Dr. Mike and his team stated that euthanasia could be provided either in his office or at our home when we're ready. Dr. Mike stated he'd be making a follow-up call to us within 2 weeks to see how Smokey's doing. My wife and I were very devastated by the news and felt we needed to provide comfort care to Smokey during her last days. A friend suggested that we place a humidifier in her room so as to provide some help in her breathing. The next day, we isolated Smokey in a room with a humidifier, and within 24 hours, her coughing ceased. 12 days after seeing Dr. Mike, we began noticing vision problems with Smokey, bumping into things, not finding her food or water bowls. My wife and I immediately felt that this were signs of end of life. That following Monday morning at approximately 10 a.m., we called Dr. Mike's office asking for general information about euthanasia services that's provided in the community during non-business hours and weekends, since they indicated they could provide these services only if we give them advance notice, like 2 weeks. Information was provided by the staff member who received our call, and we ended the call. I would like to make it very clear to this board that we did not identify ourselves during that call, nor did we mention Smokey's name. And I bring this point up to your attention because this was an anonymous call, but it was a clarifying point that the investigative committee asked about. Later that same day at approximately 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we received a call from one of Dr. Mike's assistants saying that she was calling on behalf of Dr. Mike to see how Smokey was doing. We told her, and we did not say she was declining, we told her that Smokey was doing better, that we had used the humidifier and her coughing had stopped. And we also told her, however, we think she's going blind. She's bumping into things. The assistant stated that she was very happy to hear that the cough had resolved, but was concerned about the blindness and would be sure to tell Dr. Mike about the vision issues. We received no follow-up of inquiry or interest in the change of status by Dr. Mike nor his staff. We later found our two former veterinarians at the Scottsdale Animal Health Care, and we made an appointment for our dog at that time. And on May 20th, when we brought our dog to Dr. Finstad, she immediately asked, so how is Smokey doing? Well, we told her that we took Smokey to another vet, and unfortunately, she doesn't have much time to live. And we said, and she's losing her eyesight now. Dr. Finstad immediately stated, was her blood pressure checked? You know, blindness can be caused by blood pressure, high blood pressure, if it goes unchecked. Long story short, we took Smokey to Dr. Finstad the following day, and sure enough, high blood pressure was confirmed, and we initiated high blood pressure medication for Smokey. We called Dr. Mike that afternoon to voice our dissatisfaction of his substandard care. Oh, he called back. He called back and he acknowledged reading about her vision problems in the medical record, but he didn't have anything else to say. So we told him that we were going to file a complaint to this board. A follow-up to Dr. Finstad showed blood pressure was under control, but that her blindness was permanent. After 8 months since seeing Dr. Mike, Smokey is well. She is sleeping, eating, drinking, using her box. She's just fine right now. The only problem is her permanent blindness. I believe Smokey's blindness could have been prevented if only Dr. Mike had applied his clinical and critical thinking skills that he learned during veterinarian school. We do not want any pet for being provided care by Dr. Mike. This is substandard care and he needs remedial education. A simple letter of concern or no action required of Dr. Mike will be a huge disservice to our pets and our community. And I thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
Thank you so much. And I definitely again want opinions of everybody else because this is a discussion one here. When I go through and look at everything, there's definitely communication issues going on here. And the question is, where does responsibility for that lie? And I think that's the crux of the question right now. When we saw the patient on, was it March 18th, if I remember correctly? Yes, March 18th. We didn't have the ocular problems at that point. We didn't have vision issues. Was the blood pressure high? Potentially. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if it was high at that point. Is that something you always check? Well, it kind of depends, but there was no indication of it during that appointment. We did say we're going to do a two-week follow-up. A two-week follow-up was done, and again, according to records, again, this is where communication comes in. There was some discussion about possible euthanasia. The complainant says that is that we were doing better at that time, so we weren't. But there's also follow-up of here's information for emergency clinics. If you need us, if you need to get in, give us a call, these kinds of things. So where does the responsibility lie for making that appointment? Is it something that can be forced on the client and say you have to come in? Or is it something that's up to the client to actually make that phone call and schedule the appointment? I understand that we said there were some vision problems at that point. Are we requiring a veterinarian to call every client that comes in or makes a phone call to return those? That's a very difficult thing to do, and I don't know if that's a great standard to try and establish, because that's hours and hours and hours of calls every day. I mean, we get constant phone calls about stuff. So that's where I kind of leave the discussion there and see what everybody else's thoughts are. But I mean, there's communications here, but where does it lie?
Where's the responsibility? Yeah, one thing I noticed that this cat was on the Thimisole, mm-hmm. and that was in the record.
Yes.
And hypertension is very common in mm-hmm. hyperthyroid cats. That doesn't mean you do blood pressures, like you said, on every patient that, every cat that comes in, older cat that comes in, or every cat that's on the Thimisole, it's a good idea. Mm-hmm. But the cat was there for cough.
Yeah. Okay.
The one thing that this communication done by a staff member seemed to be appropriate and said, I will inform the doctor, and then we have acknowledgement by the doctor that he got that information. So I agree with you that as an owner at that point, if you don't hear something that and your cat's blind, I'm not waiting for a call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going somewhere else or whatever. Well, but that doesn't take the responsibility away mm-hmm. from the respondent. So I'm in agreement with the investigative committee finding that information should have been, and turns out was, relayed to the doctor, and then that's where it was dropped. So that was my impression.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. If it was left there and it wasn't, you know, we'll let the doctor know, you know, and then the doctor, you know, was informed, it might look different. Because, yeah, you may not have checked blood pressure in a general practice setting for that, right? And some doctors do, some don't, but there's no, we don't have like a statute that says every
older cat.
Yeah,
there's research that shows exactly. either way.
Is yeah, exactly. But right. once it made it past, you know, the practice made the call, the team member got the information, gave it to the doctor, that's.
And is the fact that it's in the record saying, give us a call if you need to schedule something, we'll fit you in, is that enough or not? I mean, that's kind of the question, is it was mm-hmm. offered there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's there in the records, so mm-hmm. it was spoken about. And is it possible if we, again, the records lean more towards we're not doing well and we're looking at euthanasia, I mean, are you really going to say come in and do a $1,000 workup on your animal too?
Right.
Or is it, okay, we've broached that word, it's come up now, that's what we're talking about and not trying to follow up here. So again, there's gonna be a lot of cross-communication issues going on there. Is it an actual statute violation though?
Right.
We gave an emergency number and we said, call us back if you want to schedule something. Yeah, we said we're gonna let the doctor know, but again, we get 30 calls like that every single day that we're gonna let the doctor know. I mean, that's what medical records are for. Do you call back every single one of those, and are we gonna require that veterinarians spend 6 or 8 hours after they're done with their shift making phone calls of every client that called in rather than making an appointment?
It was their practice that made the call. It was their practice that, you know what I'm saying?
That did the follow-up call of 2 weeks that we said.
Yes.
So I mean, so again, I definitely am not arguing that in general. It's
but
just,
if you
is that
open
a violation
the door,
or is that a letter
right,
of concern?
Right, if you question. Open the door to the communication, yeah. but then don't close the loop, you know? Like,
well, they didn't say the doctor's going to call you back. They said, we'll let the doctor know. I mean,
right,
so
but
I mean,
as a doctor, when you get the information that the patient's now blind, does that trigger anything to you or not?
Well, yeah, well, I mean, like I said, these are things that I would say, yeah, it's probably good to make an appointment. But again, is that an actual violation, or was this information given and we just didn't have a full meeting of the minds? And is that an actual violation, or is that a letter of concern? You should probably be more clear about this stuff. But I'm having a hard time with a full violation, because it's not like we ignored it. It's, the information was provided, an emergency number was provided. We talked about euthanasia. I mean, well, those things are there. It's you have to come in for an exam now, and if you don't, I'm going to come to your house and get you to do an exam. I mean,
the issue of it, sorry, the issue of euthanasia was during the original appointment. That phone call is not a factor.
That's,
the morning phone call.
Well, in the records, it does say that. That's again, is there a meeting of the minds there? We're having testimony today saying that the cat was doing better, but in the records it says we discussed.
No, I mean, as far as when they made that morning call, mm-hmm. they didn't even say who they were or who the patient was the point.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they just were saying, because they're thinking from the visit, mm-hmm. this is it. We're going to call and see what the process is, basically.
Yeah.
So there was some discussion about end of life during mm-hmm. the first appointment, but that phone call in the morning wasn't really a factor at all.
Well, in the records, it does say that. In the client communication from April 1st, it does say that. So that's why, and that's where it says we gave the information and call us and we'll fit you in if we need to. So that's the thing is,
yeah.
I'm just having a hard time with the violation. So we've discussed it a lot. So I'll make a motion to offer a letter of concern for just making sure you clarify offering a full appointment in the future for these kinds of cases.
Okay, so you have a motion.
Second.
Madam Chair, Dr. Wright, could you change your to specify that the case is dismissed with a letter of concern?
Oh, just yes. I'll modify my motion to say it's dismissed with a letter of concern and statement that.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Maybe a roll call.
Yeah, sorry.
Dr. Byrne is aye. Ms. Frost?
Nay.
Dr. James? Not here. Dr. Nosley?
Nay.
Ms. Solomon?
Nay.
Dr. Thompson?
Nay.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay. So that doesn't go through. Any other motions?
Not by me.
Trying to find it here. I would make a motion that we accept the investigative committee's finding of a violation, as stated.
Second.
And offer a consent agreement?
Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So a motion to accept the committee's recommendation for a violation and offer a consent agreement? Okay. Mm-hmm. Motion?
Second.
Oh, right.
I guess we can talk about what the consent agreement looks like after we approve the
if it passes.
Findings of facts and conclusions of law set forth in the investigative report.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're okay with the second to see if that passes. There's a motion and a second. Should we roll call?
We don't need one for this. The next one we roll.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Okay.
So we have the 2 days down in writing.
Okay. So motion passes. So now?
Now, I would make a motion that we accept the findings of fact and the conclusions of law.
Yeah, I think that was the previous motion. That was my understanding, that we accepted the findings of facts and conclusions of law from the investigative report. And
we're so now we're doing a consent agreement?
Yeah, what the terms were.
So I would make a motion to offer a consent agreement and
do you want to see if there's any previous?
Oh, yeah.
Just in case, I don't know.
Tracy
would have.
At this point, right.
There's no previous disciplinary history.
Mm-hmm. The consent agreement, would make a motion, the consent agreement would include 4 hours of continuing education and client communication. And if not signed within 30 days, move to informal.
Informal,
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Thank you.
And is that 1 year probation?
Yes.
Okay, there's a motion.
Second.
Okay, roll call.
Dr. Burns, aye. Ms. Frost?
Aye.
Dr. Nosley?
Aye.
Ms. Solomon?
Aye.
Dr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Dr. Wright?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Okay, section two, number four, case 24148 regarding Wayne Lipovich DVM. Tracy, could you please read the front load?
Case 24148. Complainant is Beth Benjamin. The respondent is Wayne Lipovich DVM. On April 22nd, 2024, Sam, a 5-month-old male Boston Terrier, was presented to respondent for a crooked organ surgery. The surgery was performed and the dog was discharged. Complainant felt that the incision site was not shaped properly and the incision was puckered. On April 25th, 2024, the dog was dropped off at respondent's premises due to the incision site opening. The incision was repaired by respondent's associate and discharged later that day. Complainant expressed concerns that she never met with the doctor or received any follow-up calls to check on the dog. Additionally, the sterilization certificate was not signed by respondent. Respondent is the responsible veterinarian for the premises. And the committee concluded that possible violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was seconded that the board find ARS 322232 number 21, failure to maintain adequate records of veterinary services provided with respect to the inaccurate surgical sterilization certificate, and no documentation of the surgical description recorded in the medical record, and ARS 322231 as it relates to Article 502L7D, failure to document the route of administration of the induction medications, ketamine, midazolam, and acetromazine in the medical record. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-0.
Thank you. Okay, and then we do have a respondent present, or just observing, or?
No, I'm Dr. Kubik.
Yes, you're the respondent, correct?
Yes.
Do you want to come forward and?
Sure.
And do you have counsel with you, or just?
No.
Okay, you have up to 5 minutes to address the board.
I don't disagree with the findings of the investigative committee. I think this had to do with a lack of communication. The complaints are moving forward. I have addressed these in our clinic so that hopefully this doesn't happen again as far as callbacks and procedural methods, but I don't disagree with the findings at all.
Okay, thank you. and you can go ahead and step back. And there's no complaint present? Okay. So Dr. Thompson, you are the lead.
Yeah, so in reviewing this case, I would actually propose to the board to find the IC's recommendation to find the violations as written.
I would second that, but I want to add a little discussion here.
Yeah.
If I could, thank you. I have some questions regarding the surgery that I wasn't clear at all. On the record, it says inguinal, crypt, inguinal right side. That's all we have in the record. But then in the investigative committee interview, we talked about it being abdominal. The respondent talked about it being abdominal and talked about his type of closure. And then, so I wasn't clear there. And when I look at the photos and the location of the incision, that would be where you would make an incision for inguinal, not for abdominal. And the reason that's important is if it's an abdominal crypt organ, you make a midline incision. Cranial to the prepuce, and then if you have to go further back to find it, you reflect the penis and try to stay on the midline. This incision was totally inguinal, but it was described as being abdominal.
Well, I will say in the high volume settings, mm-hmm. they actually go in that area so that we don't necessarily go, well, I learned here, but mm-hmm. the newer techniques are actually on either side of the prepuce and going in there and finding it, and they're much faster at it. So the location of the incision actually doesn't surprise me in that regard.
So you're saying it still could be abdominal, and I agree
yes.
with you. My point is, if it is an abdominal incision, that's right through the abdominal muscles.
There, and I'm not going to claim to be an expert because I never learned how to do the technique, but
okay.
apparently there's a way to like separate in between muscle layers and get in there. It is an actual, I think it's Bushby that does the technique and teaches it. So mm-hmm. I personally have not done it. I reviewed a video a long time ago, but mm-hmm. it is an acceptable method in performing abdominal okay. crypt orchid surgery. One of the things that actually tripped me up on it was it kept saying right, but if I looked at the picture, it looked like it was left. But I think that it was because it was a selfie. It was a
yeah.
So I was like, wait a second. So yeah, that was.
So the record saying inguinal and it being abdominal is.
Well, for one, that's part of the violation, right? Is maintaining adequate veterinary records, right? So there's no discussion on how the surgery was actually done. The incision was more inguinal, even if the testicle was abdominal, right? But
right.
that's part of the violation. There's no written discussion of mm-hmm. what we really did. So I think that's probably being addressed in that violation.
And so then as a follow-up to that, if that was, he did describe suturing muscle. And if that's the case, we had a carprofen as our only pain management in a dog that's had a muscle incision. I'm not sure that follows acceptable procedures. However, we don't have a complaint of pain, but
yeah,
the other issue, and the one other issue I'll bring up just briefly is the respondent admitted to there being hair in the surgical site. So there wasn't anything addressed in the violation concerning an adequate preparation of the surgical site. So I fully appreciate about the inguinal versus mm-hmm. abdominal incision discussion, but even the respondent admitted looking at those photos, there's hair in that incision, and it really did fall apart. So
yeah,
is that a factor?
So we have a motion and a second. Do we want to with that?
So do you
want to add the preparation of the
yeah, it would
site
be the 32, 22, 32. I believe it's 12 as it relates to R3, 11501, C number one, failure to follow acceptable professional procedures for not adequately preparing the surgical site.
So I hope that somebody was documenting yeah. that as Dr. Nosley was reciting that. Because we're going to add that onto the IAC's recommendations.
Yes, Tracy's nodding.
Okay.
Yes. Oh,
so so we're adding that, but the motion was to offer
consent agreement.
Okay.
Yes.
Right.
So so we get that approval first, and then we go to accept the proceedings and findings of fact.
That'll be part of this. You can okay. go ahead and do that now.
Okay, so, and I also move to accept the proposed findings of fact as written by the IC.
Second.
We just added something in,
oh,
so we
right.
have the
oh, that's right. Well,
yeah.
So we have, well, we still have a motion, and did you modify your second then? Your original second?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we have a motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. All right, now.